Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
Welcome to this week's episode of Out of the Drying Pan, a Pokemon The Series podcast, where each week we discuss two episodes of the Pokemon series anime and whatever other random stuff we happen to think about. Just a quick reminder, we are an E for Explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this evening by my very dedicated to this podcast host, Austin. Hey, Austin.
See, I am dedicated and I'm not dedicated at the same time.
You're dedicated in all the wrong ways.
199 episodes in and I finally said, fuck it. And I stomped over to my fridge and I unplugged it because it was making too much noise. But I'm not dedicated enough to buy a better microphone. So my voice continues to sound tinny.
Priorities or something. Aside from your really noisy fridge, what else has been going on?
Do you know about the Pokemon thing? Involving the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, God. Okay.
We have to acknowledge it.
They disavowed any involvement, of course. They are not involved.
We live in a nightmare state. That was so repulsive, what they posted. All those, like, just all of it. Everyone knows. You don't need to come to us for a news source. It's just horrendous.
Yeah. To my fellow American listeners, I'm so sorry. I feel for you, for all of our outside the U.S. listeners, please just keep us in your thoughts, because I want to just say not all of us are feeling happy, or we didn't vote for this, so just know that there's some of us left over here still that are not a complete lost cause. Anyway.
Oh, God. Okay, but other Pokemon news. Did you see the Pokemon Lucha Libre thing?
I did not.
I tried to watch it.
Wait, is this like a parody thing, or?
No, this is real.
What?
Let me look it up. Pokemon sponsored with a pro wrestling thing.
Oh my gosh, really?
You don't know about this?
No.
Okay, hold on. I guess I'm going to send it your way.
I've kind of largely, I know this is such good podcast hosting of me, but I've kind of been tuned out of any like marketing cycle for ZA recently. I mean,
well, I watched about 20 minutes of this, and it was Pokemon teaming up with CMLL, a Mexican pro wrestling, I guess, circuit, or whatever you call those.
All right, I'm going to click on this. Hold on.
And you can see some of the pro wrestlers in their Pokemon gear. Oh, look at the Togepi lady.
Oh my goodness, this is so fun. Oh my gosh, okay, they have a Gengar. I love the Gengar. The Hawlucha guy looks pretty cool.
I watched like 20 minutes of it, and pro wrestling has never been my thing. I can never get into it. And also, I only understand English, so that was also a barrier to entry.
Well, that seems fun.
Maybe I'll give it a second chance later on. Any other Pokemon news? No, not really. Other than, it was really funny that like an actual controversy was going on with like the ice Pokemon card thing. But people seem to be a lot more concerned about the fact that they went to GameStop and when they were unable to get their cards for a shiny Meridian and Caridian in Scarlet and Violet. They were like, how dare they not give us all the shiny Pokemon? This is obscene. People were very upset about it.
Again, priorities, right?
Priorities. I went to the GameStop as well, actually, after work, just to see if they had any. They did not.
Of course
not. But I did order Legends EA while I was there.
I'm kind of surprised at you, Austin.
How so?
That you pre-ordered the game.
How is that surprising?
Because we have talked about this on this podcast before, about the fact that you should not pre-order games.
Since when did we not pre-order games? I didn't know that.
Have we never discussed this? I thought we did.
No. Nuh-uh.
The downfalls of pre-ordering games and that you should not reward these companies unless they can put out a clean, polished product that people actually want to purchase.
Oh, well, I don't give a shit.
So, see, this is why we are the way we are as a society.
Okay, I already took 2 days off of work, I'm going to be spending those 2 days playing Legends EA. I will report back after it comes out.
Okay. Well, I recently listened back to our older episode where we did talk about this before, and I think I'm pretty solidified in my approach to this. I'm going to let you buy it. I can't believe I'm doing this, because normally I am also a day one person. But I think I'm just going to let you buy it, give your initial impressions, especially because it's on the Switch. And I'm a little bit hesitant because I'm worried about performance. So I'll let you be the guinea pig. And when you're done with it, maybe I'll borrow it from you.
Maybe. All right, that's Pokemon news. At least that's what I got.
Okay, I wasn't going to talk about this. Maybe I should skip over it. Maybe this is not a conversation to have at this moment, but you were talking about, like, game controversy or whatever, and the EA thing. I know everybody's probably heard of the EA thing. Guys, if you haven't heard of the EA thing, I mean, I implore you to do your own research, but suffice it to say, and I can't speak for anybody, and I can't tell you to do anything or not, but I personally am no longer purchasing any EA products, which is very sad for me because that means no more Sims.
I have a question.
What's the question?
What about buying them used?
Well, you can't buy a digital code used.
Oh, well, can you buy a physical disc used? No. And then download it?
They don't have physical discs.
Oh, God damn it.
You're thinking back in the Sims 2 days when they used to have CD-ROMs.
I'm back in La La Land. I'm so in the past at this point.
You're like 20 years in the past. Oh my God, where have you been?
I'm looking up. Does EA have any Star Wars games coming in the future? I don't think they do.
I don't know, but
those are the only EA games I ever buy. Wait, what is Star Wars Zero Company? What is that?
I have no idea.
Turn-based tactics RPG. I didn't even know about this. Okay, whatever.
Well, I'm just saying, for me personally, I am no longer supporting that, and I will not be purchasing any more Sims games, so sad times all around. I feel like there is nothing left unspoiled in this world. I mean, EA was always a corporate, like, hellscape, and it was like, okay, yeah, it's a soulless company that you're giving your money to, but I feel like now it's even worse. It's like 1,000 times worse.
It is hard to live.
I know, it's really hard. It is really hard. I feel like there's nothing positive anymore. You know what? That makes me just want to ask the question. Guys, give us some positive stories. What's going on in your life that's positive right now? I feel like we need to hear positive things.
Well, I have some listener feedback.
Yeah, okay. So let's jump into that and stop being depressing, because I want to hear what our viewers have to say.
Okay, Ben sent us an email about his thoughts on some of the Mega Evolutions. And he said specifically that Mega Delphox is a favorite and that he loves how the twigs flying around it look like a swarm. And he's in solidarity with the sisterhood.
Awesome.
Do you appreciate that, Alex, as a fellow witch?
Very witchy vibes. Perfect for fall. Perfect going into spooky season, which we are almost in right now. And Delphox is my favorite. So I agree with Ben that it's the best one.
Ben also likes that Raichu has two megas, but thinks it's a shame it's blocked behind DLC. I think we discussed that kind of at length.
Yeah, sadly.
And Ben does not have a ranking of favorite drying pan moments because, you know, he's not going to meet us where our egotism is. But he does say that his personal favorite moment was when Jacob guest hosted. Let him know that listeners miss him and are looking forward to whenever he come back. Ben, we passed that message along to Jacob.
He was very appreciative, by the way. Hopefully he'll be able to rejoin us soon. No guarantees, of course, but we have passed along the message. Any other feedback on your end, Austin?
Well, you know who has feedback for us.
Our old friend, Pokemon Megastar.
Mega Raichu X kind of has Gorochu vibes. I thought the same thing.
Agreed.
Here is Pokemon Megastar's reasoning for Hoopa being connected to the Trick Master / King of Tricks.
I always love to chat Hoopa, so let's hear it.
Okay, so apparently the reasoning is because of the podcast, Tabletop RPG Podcast, Dunsparce and Drampa. That is a scenario that happens in that podcast. We're going to give it a listen. We really are. We need to branch out.
Yeah, for sure.
Pokemon Megastar agrees that Wally would have been perfect for Ash as a rival, and that Orass Wally is the best Wally. Man, I got to play Orass too. God damn it. There's so much stuff.
I know. Wait, I thought you finished that game.
Nope, I never finished Orass.
Oh my goodness.
Nope.
That's shocking. Okay.
Shame me. Shame me.
Shame. Oh, I can't shame because I never finished it either. So, whoopsie.
Pokemon Megastar says this might be the best boss fantasy so far, but insist that Giovanni was crying and not whatever you were talking about, Austin.
What were you talking about?
I was talking about Bukkake.
Oh my God.
You don't remember me saying that?
sometimes I just sort of delete some stuff that you say out of my brain for self-preservation purposes, so.
Okay.
I don't remember. Was that the watermelon episode, or am I misremembering?
That was coconuts, you silly Billy.
Coconuts, okay.
Okay, MVPs, LVPs. For the Volbeat and Illumise Romeo and Juliet episode, MVP is Jesse and James for having a good trap for Illumise. LVP is Volbeat and Illumise for being very boring. For the Bagon episode, MVP is Michelle and Bagon. For Michelle learning how to be more encouraging and helping Bagon learn how to fly. LVP is Max for not having enough whimsy.
Yeah, Max. Get some whimsy.
God damn it, Max. Max is me as a child, for the record. Can you believe it?
A cynic, just cranky old coot in child form.
Yeah, very possibly.
Very possibly. Well, thank you. I always enjoy, well, I should say, we always enjoy hearing your feedback. So thank you so much. If we don't have any more feedback, any other things to mention, or you just want to jump into our Chronicles episodes?
I think maybe we should reflect upon the past and how we met and how we became who we are today, and also change the course of history while we're there. Okay, so these two Chronicles episode, as I've mentioned before, the dub flipped their airing order. So which one do you want to cover first?
Okay, I kind of want to save Training Days for last because...
Okay, so we'll go in dub order, which is Celebi and Joy first, and then Training Days.
I'm going to drop a hot take. Maybe it's not a hot take. Maybe it's a really common take. This might be one of my favorite episodes of Pokemon of all time.
Okay.
Not just Chronicles, ever.
Okay, love it. We'll get to it second.
I love it. Oh my goodness. Okay.
We'll go Richie first.
Yeah, let's get the bad news out of the way first. And that bad news is Richie's here. And then we'll go into the actual good episode.
Let's see who's doing the 30 seconds for the Richie episode.
Flip the coin. Oh god, I hope it's you.
It's me.
Oh my gosh. Destiny has smiled upon me. I'm so happy.
Wait. I think we're confused.
Did I confuse myself?
I was flipping for who's doing the 30 seconds.
Oh, that means I have to summarize this whole episode. Aww.
And guess what it landed on?
You.
Tails, you're doing the 30 seconds for this one.
No, you cheated.
No, I really wasn't.
Okay, wait. Now I really am confused.
I was confused. Okay, my God. Everyone's like, what the fuck is this? I thought you were referring to the full... This is why we need better terminology! What is a summary? We don't know!
How about we discuss... Okay, stop. Breaks right now. Okay, we need to figure it out right now. So the 30-second flashback... No, that's not the right word.
30-second...
Flash challenge. I got that off of, like, you know, those reality TVs where they're like, yeah, flash challenges...
Okay, I got an idea. All right, let's call it the HM05 Flash Challenge.
Wow.
How about that?
That's a mouthful.
Is that a little too complicated? God damn it. Okay, the HM05 Flash. Oh, that is complicated. The Flash Challenge.
Flash Challenge.
I flip Tails. That means you are doing the Flash Challenge. And then I am going to do the walkthrough.
Okay.
Of the full thing.
Got it.
How does that sound?
Sure.
Okay, we'll see how long that lasts.
All right. Oof. Well, we Oof. Have...
Tensions are high. I know. Tensions are high.
I'm like literally sweating. I have to fan myself. It got a little heated. We have finally, Austin and I, come up with a terminology that I think we can agree on to differentiate the 30-second summary from the full summary of our episodes. After 199 episodes, you think we would have had our shit together, but we don't because we're clowns. I think we got it. Austin, you're going to count me down, right?
Okay.
I'm doing... the HM05 Flash Challenge for this episode.
That's which too long of a name. I take it back.
Oh my god, we didn't figure it out after all. Guys, we need help.
Just Flash Challenge. Flash. 30-second Flash. Okay, got it.
Flash Dance.
Ooh, I like Flash Dance.
Flash. In a flash. I'm going to flash everyone in...
You're going to dance for your life in 3, 2, 1, go!
Oh my god. Richie's back. Celebi's here, and we meet an old Nurse Joy, which I don't think we've ever seen. Celebi sends us into the past, 75 years, where he rewrites history by saving a boy named Nick, who's in love with little Nurse Joy, and helps save the Pokemon Center that's going to be demolished in the present day. And we return to the present where Nick is the mayor and Joy is still alive, and they don't look like they're 80, but I guess that's another
time.
Conversation. Okay.
God, I am so glad you brought up the fact that they do not look their ages. That was very distracting to me.
I fully expect you to do a deep dive into that as we discuss. Oh,
you know me.
You gotta really dissect it.
Did you like this episode?
Okay. Two things. One, it wasn't that bad. It was okay.
It was kind of what I feel like the Celebi movie should have been.
It could have been a B plot. I don't think there was enough there to make a movie, though.
Okay, because I just feel like going through time with Celebi is a better concept than Celebi dropped Professor Oak from 40 years ago in our laps, and everything else that happens is unrelated to that.
Would it surprise you to know that I barely remember the plot of the Celebi movie?
I mean, there isn't really much of one.
Exactly. My second thing I was going to say is I have no memory of this episode, but I'm fairly certain we watched it probably at least once in the very first run we did of this watch through. Okay, so I didn't remember it at all.
I mean, spoilers, they kind of go ahead and remake this episode in a couple years after this.
Are you kidding?
Not kidding.
What? That's pretty wild.
Do you want to guess which characters?
There is no way I'm going to be able to guess, so.
No, you really would not be.
All right. Are we spoiler alert? Are you going to tell us?
It's the May and Meowth team up to go back in time episode.
I don't remember that at all, but damn, stay tuned, you guys, when we get to that episode.
For now, it's all Richie all the time, because it's finally time for Richie to have his own special spotlight episode with no other recurring characters appearing.
That's also a real shock, the fact that no other like human characters that we've seen before make an appearance. I mean,
nope, just Richie.
I don't count Richie's Pokemon, but
Richie is still traveling. God knows what he's doing. And he's in a polluted, dirty city. Ew, gross.
Gringy city.
He finds an old man tending to the ruins of an old Celebi shrine in an alleyway. And he's like, old man, where's the Pokemon Center? And the man tells him, but apparently the Pokemon Center is going to be shut down today. Oh my god.
What a coincidence that is.
So we go to the Pokemon Center where there's like a huge team of construction workers and all their equipment. And old woman Nurse Joy is there and she has like her arms spread out and she's doing a one woman protest. And she says, you can't knock down this Pokemon Center. Which, my question is, if this is a large scale city, why would they close down a Pokemon Center?
They said that they were clearing that plot of land to build an office tower. And they were going to build a new, modern, renovated Pokemon Center in a different area of the town, or the city, rather.
Would she have been okay with renovating that building and making a modernized Pokemon Center in that lot?
I don't think so, because I think the lesson we're supposed to take away from this is you've got the younger, newer generation of people that don't have any respect or they're not attached in any way to relics from the past. They're not, you know, it's they don't care about the symbolism or the memories or whatever of this place and what it means to certain people. And I don't know, honestly, I mean, not to be too like sad or whatnot, but it kind of made me feel like there's a lot of that going on these days in real life where it's like certain people's greed or ambition destroys things that can't be replaced.
It's an 80-year-old building. You gotta maintain it.
Well, yeah, you can maintain buildings and keep original things, but update them and, you know, structurally to make sure everything's like okay, but you can still keep original fixtures and things. I don't know. It's just, I think there's a lot of that. There's, you know, people who tear down natural landmarks, formations, whatever.
It makes me question, and we'll never know these answers, the origins of the Pokemon Center concept. And what is the oldest surviving Pokemon Center in the world?
Ooh, good questions.
But this one's 80 years old, and the mayor, the unseen mayor, is a villainous mayor because he wants to destroy all the old architecture. And a younger Nurse Joy, who is this older Nurse Joy's granddaughter, runs out. And she says, we had a week extension, so you can't tear us down because we had need time to, you know, move everything out or whatever. The construction worker guys are like, no, we are tearing this down today. And you need to get out of the way or else we're going to murder you.
Oh, my God. This is like, you know, when people chain themselves to trees and people like threaten to bulldoze the tree regardless. Like, that is what I was getting. This is so Fern Gully. Oh, my gosh.
I was kind of expecting them to like take the bulldozers and like mow over Nurse Joy. But instead, they use their Pokemon to attack. At this moment, Rose the Talo and Zippo the Charmeleon and Sparky the Pikachu counterattack. And Richie's like, I don't know what's going on here, but you can't justify attacking an elderly Nurse Joy. So Richie is able to chase all these grown men off single-handedly. I'm guessing because they didn't want to get sued.
I mean, they were, didn't they say they were going to go tattle to the mayor or something?
Oh, is that, okay, they were going to come back in 20 minutes.
Yeah, they were going to bring the cops.
Oh, Officer Jenny, whose side would she be on? That's a good question.
I could tell you exactly what side the police would be on in a dispute like that.
I know, you always think of Joy and Jenny kind of having a thing going on there, but maybe not. Maybe there's not always Joy and Jenny solidarity.
I don't know if there would be a Jenny in this. I feel like they would have returned with, like, generic police, which, you know.
Yeah, the officer man Jennies.
Yeah, just a friendly reminder, the cops are there to protect businesses and assets, not the people. So be careful out there.
Richie is taken inside the Pokemon Center, and we see a whole bunch of old photos on the wall. We get a whole lot of exposition. Essentially, tomorrow is the 80th anniversary of this Pokemon Center's opening, and also it's elderly Nurse Joy's birthday. So she's probably like, what, 90 or so?
She doesn't look like it.
No, she does not look like it, but that's what we're told.
I mean, okay, wait.
Math.
Okay, no, I just want to like ask because I know we don't have answers and I know I'm thinking too much, but they say 75 years ago.
Oh, I thought they said 80 years ago.
No, 75.
Man, what is wrong with my notes this episode?
I don't know. What did you like black out or something when you were watching this?
No, it says here 75th anniversary. I'm just adding some years to Joy.
So, yeah, why are you giving her more age than she needs, actually?
Okay, so she's about 85-ish.
She does not look like she's almost 90.
We also see a framed photo of, you know, the old Marientown, which apparently used to be like a field. This used to be a tranquil rural field before it got industrialized. Tale as old as time. We also see a little boy in a picture. And Grandma Joy tells us that she saw Celebi once, right before her friend Nick died in a landslide.
And a landslide brought him down?
Yes.
That's such a random, I'm so sorry, that's such a random way to die is like a landslide in the Pokemon world. Like, it should have been something like he got crushed by like a meteor, right? Or something like wild. I don't know.
Sure. We haven't introduced the Deoxys yet.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So Richie apparently is now staying the night in the Pokemon Center. I guess those construction worker guys are taking their sweet time to come back with the mayor. And while he's in there, Celebi just pops up and is like, hey, guess what? I got a surprise for you, Richie. And Celebi starts pulling drawers out of shelves. Yes, Alex?
I had a random thought in my head when you said that the construction guys were taking their sweet time coming back. Because I'm like, well, Celebi probably killed them. Because ultimately,
that's a big leap of logic.
Well, I don't think so necessarily, because it really doesn't matter what happens to anybody in the present timeline, because as we'll see, what happens after the fact, but...
So Celebi rummages through an old desk and finds a carving of Celebi hidden away. And Celebi's like, look, Richie, look at me. Look at this effigy of me. And Richie's like, okay, Celebi, what do you want me to do with this? And Celebi says, nothing, just drop it. Let's go on a journey. So Celebi takes Richie through time.
As it does.
Takes him back 75 years in time. He drops the Celebi effigy. And instead of being in the Pokemon Center 75 years in the past, he's out in a field somewhere. and he is on the site of a young Nurse Joy falling off of a cliff as her Ponyta stands there and brays at her. And at first I thought the Ponyta was attacking her because it's a horse and they're evil.
That's what I thought. I thought it was literally like rushing her off of the cliff and she was like being stomped to death by it. But no, it was trying to help her.
So Richie saves her with the Ponyta, even though what's funny is we can say for a fact she would have been fine even without Richie. She would have been able to save herself.
How do you know? She was up on a giant cliff.
Because she was alive in the present day.
Oh, good point. Oh, that's some big brain shit right there.
So Richie's presence was unnecessary for that disaster. That's not why he went back in time.
No.
Instead, Richie and the young Nurse Joy come across Nick, who is, you know, a worker boy. He's a carpenter boy, and he is working on the Celebi shrine that we saw earlier in the present. Oh my god, earlier in the present. That Richie saw previously relative to his timeline. But right now, it's not in the middle of some skyscrapers. It's just kind of out in the forest grove. Nick is working on it because Joy loves the Celebi shrine, and he's trying to improve it. And he's all blushy around her because he has a total crush on her. Oh my god. Richie finally at this point figures out, oh my god, I'm in the past because I'm talking to dead people.
Good lord.
Thanks, Richie. They comment on how Richie is dressed like a freak. And Richie's like, yeah, I'm from a far way away. Ha ha ha.
To be fair, Richie's dressed like a freak even in modern times.
Remember when we thought he was an elevator technician because of the way he was dressed?
He thought he could be an elevator technician, but he's just an annoying little boy.
So we get to the Pokemon Center, which is pretty much done. Nick's dad is there, and Nick's dad is a carpenter who works for the company that was hired to build this Pokemon Center.
It wasn't just they were hired by any old company or whatever. They were hired by the affluent and very rich Nurse Joy family.
Yeah, does the Joy family own centers?
I mean,
presumably,
the way they were talking about this, I mean, they financed the entire build of that particular center. So do they have a monopoly on all Pokemon Center and healthcare in the world?
Oh my god, we need to see Pokemon Center corporate offices and see like CEO Joy.
Oh my goodness. That would be amazing.
We know that they also have involvement with the Pokemon League because they do the gym inspections. Is that through the Pokemon Center Corporation or is that a separate thing that just that Joy is involved with?
So basically Nurse Joy is the only supplier of healthcare and also has ties and investments or whatever, presumably, in all sorts of industries.
And they don't charge money. They just give out healthcare and food and room and board for free.
So how are they being financed?
Wealthy donors? The Pokemon world is a utopia. It's not like ours.
I'm trying to wrap my head around the concept.
This episode actually has a lot of class division themes going on because Nick, the carpenter boy, is like, I can't tell the beautiful young Nurse Joy. Well, I guess she's not a nurse yet. The beautiful Joy that I like her because she's of a different social status than I am. And I'm just a lowly carpenter boy. And I'm like, this is kind of wild. Even though didn't Nick's dad own the company? I would think they would have some money.
Did they say that? I might have missed it.
Maybe I made that up. Well, apparently they travel from town to town because they are going to leave tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, actually, is the opening of the Pokemon Center. And also, it's going to be Joy's birthday party. So, isn't that fun? But Nick's going to miss it. And Nick's dad is like, well, we could stay, like, another couple hours just for the party. And Nick's like, no. I don't want to stay. By the way, Dad, can Richie stay with us tonight? And Nick's dad is like, okay.
This random kid that they found in the woods.
Sure. I mean, presumably they don't own that home they're staying in. Who knows who it belongs to? So as Richie is sitting there thinking, oh my god, this is so crazy. I'm in the past. This little boy is going to die tomorrow in a landslide incident and not a meteorite hitting him. And at that moment, we learn that little Joy has gotten in trouble yet again because she's currently missing somehow in the night.
So I have a question. Are we operating on like time travel rules where Richie can't say that he's from the future and that he's going to die tomorrow if he doesn't stay? Like, what's going on?
Let's save time travel discussion for the end.
Okay. Fair.
I think that frames everything that happens.
Okay, sure.
Every time Celebi comes around, we just gotta have this discussion yet again.
I know.
But anyway.
I can't ever wrap my head around time travel. I never will be able to understand.
So Nurse Joy has gotten herself into life-threatening peril a second time in 12 hours because there's a storm happening and she wants to make sure the Celebi shrine is fine. And this time she's trapped under a tree. Somehow. I'm kind of thinking at this point maybe Nick should live and Joy should die because it seems like she's tempting fate quite a bit. Maybe that's how we need to set the timeline correct, but that's just me.
Oh my God. I know you said not to talk about time travel stuff, but wouldn't it have been so ironic if Richie going into the past somehow shifted the track and it was him somehow who got Nurse Joy to die rather than Nick instead, and it was like, one of y'all have to die. The universe is demanding a blood sacrifice, and it doesn't matter where it comes from, but one of y'all's gonna die. Like, that would have been funny.
Maybe Richie has to shove her into the path of the landslide. Die!
How many chances do you get? Because it seems like Celebi... Oh, I'm doing it. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, it really does seem like the universe is trying to kill Joy at all costs. Because we get her out from under the tree, Richie and Nick. Then lightning strikes them. Because lightning strikes the Celebi shrine. And Nick is like, oh my God, not the Celebi shrine. So he runs up to it to, I guess, put out the fire that just started. And then lightning strikes him again, a second time. Apparently, this lightning bolt is so slow that we can all run in slow motion toward Nick as the lightning's going to hit him. And in that... Because Nick also is perpetually in mortal peril today. And in that moment, Celebi directly interferes and appears and puts up like a Celebi force field and is like, not today, lightning.
So why does Richie even have to be here if Celebi has had the power to shield them from the danger?
Because Nurse Joy, in the present, already said that she had seen a Celebi right before her friend Nick died in the landslide. So this incident was going to happen with or without Richie's presence.
You mean the lightning incident?
I think so.
So are you saying in the past, the original timeline... without Richie, that Celebi saved Nick from the lightning. It just so happened that because Richie was not there the first time, that he didn't save him from the landslide.
Yes.
But my question still stands, because if Celebi intervened with the lightning strike, how could it not intervene with the landslide? Doesn't matter.
That's a good question.
Why not just show up again? Like, okay.
Okay, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Celebi has already saved Nick once, and it's like Spider-Man and Family Guy. Everyone gets one.
Everyone gets one, I guess. That's true.
So, Celebi, having done its good deed for the day, leaves. And the timeline is restored, I guess. But we all go back to Nick's dad's house. We get little girl Joy back to the Pokemon Center. And we find out that Nick's dad is a weirdo because he always hides a secret compartment in every desk he builds.
What the hell?
And Nick has carved the wood effigy of the Celebi and puts it in the secret compartment. And his plan is they are going to deliver the desk to the Pokemon Center tomorrow morning and then leave without a word. And then I guess Joy will find the Celebi effigy and be thrilled that Nick carved it for her, even though she has no means of knowing how to do that. I guess it's a little boy's plan, so it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, no, because the adult is in on it too, right? Because the dad's the one that builds the hidden compartment.
Okay.
And Nick puts the effigy in it, and he's like, oh, yeah, Joy will definitely find this secret and very hard-to-find compartment. Like, there's absolutely no way she would have ever known to look in the hidden drawer area behind the real drawer.
And we know for a fact she doesn't find it because it's still there 75 years later, untouched.
Who the hell would ever look in a secret hidden drawer compartment? Nobody.
Well, not Nurse Joy. So what's really funny is we cut to the next morning in the past, and Richie's at the Pokemon Center helping to set up the party. And apparently he, knowing that Nick is imminently about to die in a landslide, left Nick and his father, went to the Pokemon Center on his own accord, set things up, missed the fact that Nick and his father stopped by to drop off the desk and then left. And then he's only now figuring out, oh my God, Nick and his father are going to die in the landslide any moment now.
Even though Nick told him the night before that they were planning to leave early and that they weren't planning to go to the party and that they were just going to bypass it entirely. So Richie didn't even push him back then. He wasn't like, oh, no, you should definitely should go to the party. Oh, yeah, like totally don't want to miss that party. Like, he wasn't pushing him. And then to your point, he just fucks off to go help with the party and lets that part play out, knowing, oh my God, Richie.
Why did he leave Nick? Why did he leave Nick in the first place? Why was he not like Fry in the time travel Roswell episode of Futurama? And he was like, I'm not letting anything happen to you. I'm going to stick to you like glue.
Yeah, he should have not let him out of his sight and been like, no, I insist you come to the party.
Because Richie is the kind of person who would think about these things. We know he actually has a brain between his ears. And he would sit and talk to Sparky and be like, okay, so Celebi brought us here in the past. And that means Celebi probably has a mission for us, because why else would Celebi bring us here? Celebi wants us to do something to the timeline. But is it something I was already supposed to do? Or is it something I'm supposed to change? Richie would try to figure this out.
He should know already. He should know. He knows that the boy died. So that, if I got sent to the past after just learning that somebody of import died, I'd be like, okay, I'm probably here in the past to figure out how to prevent that from happening.
Okay, you want to change the time. That's your assumption. I'm here to right a wrong.
Yes, and the fact that he just leaves Nick to his own devices and doesn't stick with him and insist. Richie, you know what? Maybe Richie did know that that was his goal, but he got fried. His brain got fried by the electrical storm when he almost got hit by lightning, and then he got selective amnesia or something. I don't know.
Ash disease.
Oh my God.
So Richie finally has figured out that he's supposed to save Nick from the landslide. So he hijacks Joy's Ponyta, runs out to like the cliffs to find them on like the passageway. And Nick's father is like, whoa, son, you need to slow down. These are very treacherous cliffs. And Richie's like, oh my God, you need to turn around right now and go to the party and tell Nurse Joy that you love her because I said so. I'm Richie. You gotta go back. Nick's father is like, okay, Nick, what do you want to do? And Nick says, let's go back to the party. And they do. And then seconds later, the landslide happens and no one dies.
I love how the landslide happens right in front of Richie's face and right as Nick and Dad are leaving, and nobody comments on the fact that, hey, if you hadn't just ridden up right now, we would have been under that landslide. Like, I feel like they should have had a moment where Nick's dad was like, holy shit, you saved us. But he doesn't say anything. I'm like, okie dokie then.
I weirdly think this should have been a movie. I know they say that about every episode these days.
Okay, I have a question though, thinking about that. Okay, Nurse Joy in the present, or Granny Joy, says that Nick died, but they don't mention the dad. So did Dad survive the landslide?
Oh, that's horrible if Dad survived.
They don't mention him, do they? They just say Nick died, or Nick got lost in the landslide, whatever the hell they said. But They don't say Nick and his father.
Maybe Nick's father survived.
Could you imagine? Oh, that's so horrible. I feel like you could have made a movie about that. Like, the tragedy.
And then he tries to clone Nick, and then Giovanni hires him to clone him you.
Exactly. Woo. Oh my God, I just had a thought. Oh my God, I had a brain blast, you guys.
Okay, Jimmy Neutron.
What if the plot of the movie, the B plot, like at the beginning, was that Nick and his dad were riding, Nick dies in the landslide, and then Nick's dad, driven to mania and grief over the death of his son right in front of his very eyes, became the evil mayor who tore down the whole town in the present time.
We're going to have to compress the timeline quicker than 75 years.
Okay, well, Nurse Joy didn't look like she was 95 or whatever. So, you know, I'm taking a little bit of artistic liberty here. But wouldn't that have been such the better story if, like, his grief and the sentimentalness around, like, you know, the Pokemon story, he's like, I couldn't stand to see it. I couldn't stand to be here. Celebi didn't save my kid. Or somehow, like, maybe that could have factored in. Like, he saw Celebi, but Celebi didn't help. And then he was driven to grief and anger and did all this stuff, right? Ooh, that would have been so much better.
Well, let's return to the present, because Nick goes to the party and makes a love confession to Little Joy. And all the grown men all around them are like, hooray!
That was weird.
There were no other children around. by the way.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Except for Richie, who disappears in the green light of Celebi and returns to the present day, where he sees the construction workers are at the Pokemon Center, and he runs up and he's like, oh my god, stop! You can't tear down this Pokemon Center! Ah! Like, everyone's like, whoa, who is this kid? What is happening? Because it turns out Richie has changed the timeline and a bunch of stuff has happened. Nick did not die, and he apparently stayed in this town or came back or something, and is the current 85-year-old mayor of this town, and it has not been urbanized, and it's like a tranquil little valley town, and we're not going to tear down the Pokemon Center. We're just renovating it.
He doesn't look 85 either.
Nick looked fucking good. Nick looked like 47.
I know. He looked like he works out for sure. I guess it's that carpenter blood. Are we to assume in the present day, now that Nick has survived, that the Joy, like him and Joy were together, and that the younger Joy, you know, granddaughter Joy, is his child instead of the child of somebody else?
I'm going to assume they're not together or married because, I mean, they kind of had like a tender moment a little bit, but it wasn't like they said, oh, and we're married, or they were like standing together, or they were holding hands or anything. We didn't see like their wedding photos or anything like that. I think they're just old friends.
Okay.
And he had a childhood crush on her 75 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that's all.
Okay.
Because presumably, okay, now's the time travel conundrum section.
Oh boy, segment. Here we go.
Let's do it.
And Alex's inability to understand time travel. Okay.
I'm going to assume Celebi appears to be a force that when it time travels, the timeline corrects itself whenever it interferes. Because the whole nature of Celebi is it exists outside of linear time, and all of its actions never seem to cause a negative effect. Like, there's no, like, tearing in the space of time or anything. Celebi's like, you know, I should probably save that little boy who died that one time. I'm going to get another random little boy to do it because I feel like it. I'm Celebi. Because Celebi doesn't think like a person. It thinks like a time-traveling forest sprite. I mean, for the Celebi, maybe Nick died yesterday, and it was like, oh shit, I gotta fix this. I know what to do.
And Dialga doesn't have a problem with this at all.
Dialga has no problems whatsoever with this.
So there are no rules in the same sense of like, you know, when you have time travel depicted in other media where it's like, you can't let yourself see your old self, you can't talk to anyone, you can't change anything else, you only have to do this one thing, and you can't say that you're from the future, like, you know, all these rules or whatever, like,
I mean, think about the butterfly effect. If this town never got expanded and industrialized, people wouldn't be living there. People would not be meeting people and getting married and having children. So people would not be born. Like, all sorts of things would happen.
So Celebi is basically responsible for the deaths of hundreds, if not thousands, of future people because it changed the timeline in which all of this would not have happened.
Or Celebi is magical and presumably, Joy, the young Joy, still married the same man and had the same children and grandchildren, even though that's impossible because the history of the town is different. Meaning, somehow, the timeline maintains itself and nothing catastrophic happens and no one is negatively affected by this?
How, that couldn't possibly be the case, though. Like, there's so many factors that would have changed by him being alive versus dead. It's just impossible. You can't wrap your head around it. It's impossible.
Like, presumably, if you come back to the present, Richie and Ash and May and Brock and Max and Misty would never be born because everything would be different.
Exactly. I mean, you can't rationalize it. It doesn't make sense. History or the present is only the present as it is because
every single thing that has ever happened happened exactly the way it did.
Exactly. You can't change one little thing even slightly in the past because the ramifications are incalculable. You couldn't even know.
But Celebi doesn't care about that. Celebi's like, I changed my mind. I didn't want that little boy to die. Poof.
Oh, God. Okay.
Time travel in the Pokemon world is magical and has no ill effects ever. The end.
I mean, the way they kind of framed it is like, this timeline and this future outcome is better than the original one because we didn't have modern urbanization, pollution, people, whatever. You know, we've got a town with people who care about nature. So inherently, this is the better timeline, which call me like unfeeling or whatever, but like I kind of agree because I would have preferred this timeline over that too. So,
oh, maybe this is why there's no climate change in the Pokemon world, is because Celebi is making sure there's no development that's going to cause the carbon emissions to go up too high.
Oh, be careful, Austin. Be careful, Austin. Those are, in real life, banned words. You can't say the word emissions, and you can't say the word climate change, because those are banned words that are negative. So remember that.
God, we're in hell. We need Celebi.
I know.
Alex, what if we're in the timeline that Celebi has not fixed?
We need Celebi. We need a freaky little kid with an electric mouse pet and a creature that looks like a troll doll to come back and help us and change the past.
All right, let's flip the coin, because this is getting dreary. Flip. I'm going first. I guess my MVP is going to be Celebi for being a climate activist.
Yeah.
I don't know. Celebi does whatever Celebi wants. It doesn't care. And my LVP is going to be Joy's Ponyta. Because I'm not entirely convinced it wasn't trying to kill her on that cliff.
Maybe Ponyta was like
the true villain.
No, trying to defend the timeline, because it's like, okay, you know, everything has to be in balance, right? Like I mentioned before, it's like for every person that doesn't die, there has to be an accounting, right? It's like the universe has to demand it, right? So because Nick didn't die, then somebody else elsewhere had to die. So maybe Ponyta was just trying to right the wrong here.
I'm guessing you've not seen the new Final Destination movie.
I haven't.
It deals with this concept.
Somebody has to die to meet the balance quota of souls?
No. Someone's, you know, has their vision and saves people from dying in an incident. And then fast forward to the present, 60 years later, and people who never should have been born because people were supposed to die in the incident.
Oh.
The descendants of the survivors are the ones being killed now because they never should have existed in the first place.
That's actually a pretty neat concept for a Final Destination movie of all things. So, okay, not to derail the conversation too much more, but if by that logic somebody had to die somewhere just to make sure that we are balanced out, who died instead of Nick? Some rando person somewhere.
Oh, I know. The old man who was maintaining the Celebi shrine in the first timeline.
Oh.
He was nobody. He was just a rando.
You know what? I will admit that my first thought was that that was Nick.
Nick has survived. He's been alive the whole time. He did not die the landslide at all.
I thought that was all, honestly, I thought that was going to be the plot. I thought that when Granny Joy was like, my friend Nick disappeared and got lost in the landslide, that maybe she and everybody else was under the impression that Nick had died in the landslide. But turns out Nick was trapped, got amnesia because he got hit on the head, went off to like live a different life or whatever, and then somehow ended up back in this town where he's like maintaining the last remnants of the shrine that he's inexplicably drawn to because he's like, it seems familiar, but I can't quite place it. And then through Richie's intervention, that guy and Granny Joy would be reunited, and then she would learn, oh my god, that was Nick the whole time. But no, that was not the plot. It was totally different.
So did you not like this episode? Because you keep on rewriting it.
I think that it had potential to be better.
Okay.
More impactful, but I didn't dislike it. I think it could have been different, though.
It needed more time.
I think it needed more emotional oomph.
My quote is going to be Richie talking to the evil construction workers who are assaulting elderly women in the street.
Oh, you took my quote.
Oh, sorry. I'll let you have that one then.
No. I have another one.
Okay. All right. Richie says, I don't know what's going on here, but I don't think there's any excuse to be attacking the two Nurse Joys. And a construction worker says, you want us to attack you instead?
I mean, that was a pretty good clapback, I would say.
Okay.
All right. That's great, Austin. Good choices. My MVP. I don't know if anybody deserves MVP, really.
Celebi, Richie, Nick, Nick's dad.
None of them.
Granddaughter, honestly. Nurse Joy, Mayor Nick.
Mayor Nick. Okay, you know what? I'm going to say Granny Joy.
The lightning bolt. Oh, okay, Granny Joy.
I'm going to say Granny Joy because that lady had convictions and she was very adamant about preserving the past and not letting them tear down the Pokemon Center.
Ooh.
Yes.
Does Granny Nurse Joy count as Nurse Joy or is she a separate entry?
She's a separate entry because I don't think we've ever seen an elderly Joy.
She physically has a difference.
So yeah, and her hair's different, and she's got bags under her eyes, so she's different.
Okay.
But yeah, Granny Joy, she was a baddie.
Even though she was death prone as a child.
Yeah, even though she was always in the path of danger. But maybe, I don't know, that's a testament to her, like, adventurousness and...
Her gumption.
Yeah, her gumption. Willingness to put herself in harm's way for others. I don't know, something like that. My LVP is... I'm gonna say Nick's dad for LVP. Because I think that he was such a baloney head for not insisting that his kid go to the party. Like, what was the big hurry that he's always pushing his son to be like, work, 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 and no rest, no fun. We're on to the next job. We don't have time for canoodling or socialization. And I'm also just going to subscribe to the fact that I think he became the villain ultimately, and he was the evil mayor, even though they don't say that. So my quote is the only other one I wrote down, which is when there's the big storm happening, when Richie and Nick run out into the thunderstorm to find the unconscious nurse Joy laying in the road, trapped under a tree. Nick tries to run off and get help or something like that. And Richie's like, wait, come back. It's too dangerous out there right now. And Nick says, do you think it's any safer in the bottom of a tree? As the lightning storm is happening. That's it from me.
Now it's time for the good stuff, in your opinion.
Oh my God, the best stuff. Are you kidding? This is the best.
Okay, time me for training days.
I've been waiting for this episode for so long. It's one of the very few episodes, Austin, you'll be so proud of me, that I actually remembered. Anyway, okay, are you ready to summarize?
Yep.
The best episode ever. Okay, in 3, 2, 1, go.
It is a vague time in the past, and Jessie is a promising Team Rocket field agent at Team Rocket Academy, but she keeps on losing her partners because she doesn't care about them. And then she gets assigned to a partner named James, and they get a talking meow. And they are competing with Butch and Cassidy in the Team Rocket Academy Olympics or something. And Jessie and James and Meowth are the best team ever. And there's a guy with a mohawk named Viper. And he's a red Snorlax.
Time. Very succinct summary there. Okay. How can you not, like, love this episode?
I think you talking this episode up so much made me remember it as better than it really was. I think that's the problem.
The slanderousness of it all.
I went into this being like, oh, it's going to be so great. And I kind of came away from it being like, oh, I thought it was better than that. Oh, never mind.
Okay, you know what? This may be a classic case of me having the rose-colored glasses on and slightly
distorting it. Yeah, see what that does? See what that does? See that effect?
Yeah, it does. Okay, I agree. I think it was a little distorted in my memory because I did think that there was more like Jessie and James interaction outside of Meowth than there was. And that was a little disappointing because I thought there was more to that. But I still maintain I love this episode. It's great. And I love the implications of it, too, because, you know, as we do on this podcast, we assign meaning where there isn't any, and we sort of talk it up and stuff. So let's just talk about this. Jump right in. So we are thrust right into the action right away. Team Rocket, in the present time, is being actively blasted off again from whatever misbegotten encounter that they've had with the twerps. I wonder where, like, they're coming from. Any thoughts on, like, what they're being blasted off from?
The Mirage Kingdom? I guess. Did they get blasted off from there?
Was that chronologically the last time we saw them? So that would be...
Actually, this episode in Japan aired between the two Mirage Kingdom episodes. But it's clearly supposed to be an evergreen, this could take place at any time.
Any time, yeah. Yeah. Any twerp encounter episode, it could happen. But yeah, so they're flying through the air, defying physics, which is really fun. And James has bottle caps in his pocket that start tumbling out as they're flying through the air. And he's very upset. He's like, oh no, my bottle caps. But he manages to save one with a big red R on it, which just so happens to be from his training days at the Team Rocket Academy. Jessie, who in a rare moment is feeling very nostalgic and starts reminiscing on the good old days about when she was a young lady in the training academy. And I just have to pause for a second and be like, ask you what you thought of the Team Rocket training academy.
Of course there's Team Rocket University. It's probably an accredited institution.
I love it. Oh my God. I love it so much.
Of course.
I can't believe they have an entire facility dedicated to training field agents and Team Rocket hopefuls.
You can't believe that. They have like bottle cap water bottles with their insignia on the top. I know.
They have company merchandise. It's so great. Oh my God. So Jessie recounts one of her earliest training exercises where her and a teammate, randomly assigned other guy, are tasked with, like, they're all tasked with various training exercises and have to get through them together as a team. And this particular one, she has to steal a giant Articuno statue from the training room area. But unfortunately, her teammate guy is a bumbling buffoon and bungles the job and drops Jessie so that she loses the statue and it shatters all into a million pieces. So she's frustrated, and so she abandons her teammate and is chastised by her training instructor for the fact that she has lost 10 partners in the past 2 months because she just cannot vibe with any single one of them and keeps abandoning them because she thinks they can't keep up with her.
Jessie doesn't vibe with any old rando.
I know. You gotta be just right.
You gotta be on her level.
And I love, okay, so this is where I start to love this episode because I love the implication that Jessie is just so much of a badass. She's so on a different level than these stupid idiot clown guys that she's paired with. They just can't match her. They cannot match her physical prowess, her mental prowess, like just the fact that she's better than all of them. I love that.
So the implication here is any rando can be a Team Rocket grunt and wear a beret, but Jessie is in a training program for like the elite Team Rocket member. Like she and Butch and Cassidy, it seems like they operate individually. Sometimes they report to a higher up and sometimes they can do whatever the hell they want. But it seems like they are on a different level than just like getting coffee for Giovanni or whatever.
Yeah, I would think that if they have like a hierarchy that they're not just like any old random intern or grunt who's doing the menial everyday tasks. Like they're the elite field agents who are doing secret missions and higher level things that require more precise ability.
Which is why they're high ranking enough that even though he despises them, they can still contact Giovanni at any time and be like, hey boss, guess what we're doing?
Because they have the Giovanni phone. It's a direct line to him. But yeah, no, this is early days, so they haven't really like gotten on Giovanni's radar yet. I mean, they know of Giovanni, of course. Giovanni somewhat knows of them because as we see in this very next scene, instructor, drill sergeant, I guess his name is Viper. So he reports in with Giovanni where he praises these new recruits and he's got their dossiers out and he's like, oh yeah, so promising blue team members, Butch and Cassidy are doing really well. Like they definitely have a bright future ahead of them. But there's also this other girl on the red team. Her name is Jessie. And her numbers don't look very good because she's not syncing up well with her partners. But I'm intrigued by her unique ability as a trainee. So I really want to just keep seeing what happens. And Giovanni's like, okay, whatever. Give her one more chance. And if she can't hack it at this point, she's out.
This raises the question if Jessie's mom and Giovanni's mom are canon.
Oh my God. I remember that. Oh my goodness.
That does not come up at all.
It doesn't come up at all. He doesn't recognize Jessie otherwise. So I don't know. It kind of makes me wonder what's going on with Viper. Like, why is he taking such a special interest in Jessie of all the people?
I think maybe Jessie's just the most competent.
I guess she's got the secret aura. She's got that intrigue, main character type of thing going on.
Yeah, did you see all those other people? They had boring haircuts.
I know. And,
no distinguishing features.
They had brown hair.
Yeah, that's how you know they're not anime character mainstays.
Exactly. So Viper, he has a blue mohawk, by the way, so he's important.
Oh my God, I thought it was a purple mohawk.
Oh my God, are we doing this again? Are you fucking kidding me?
Okay, I gotta.
Are we seriously, guys? This is blue and purple Shuckle all over again. Please help.
That is purple.
Give me a picture. I need to see it.
Okay, you misremembered.
Here we go. Here we go again with this crap. Guys, is it blue or purple? Let us know. Oh, no. Okay, in this shot, it looks purple, but I swear to God, there were some other shots that where it was blue.
Where are these other alleged shots?
I don't know. I don't have them on my person at the moment.
They exist in your imagination.
Okay, I can see this particular screenshot that you may or may not have edited in the 5 seconds it took you to find this is purple.
Let me send you every single picture of Viper Team Rocket that comes up on Google Images.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Oh, it does look blue here.
Oh, what?
Look at this shot. It looks blue in this screen grab.
I told you. Okay, I'm not crazy.
For the most part, it looks purple, though.
Okay, I'll concede that the overwhelming majority of the pictures is purple. So I stand corrected, guys. It's purple. You win this round.
We'll see what our next color disagreement is.
Good Lord. It's always blue and purple. They really need to get their shit together with this.
They,
the colorists of the Pokemon anime back in the 2000s. Okay, just as we were interrupted with this debate over blue or purple, a strange, random, transient Meowth who can talk suddenly interrupts and walks right into Giovanni's boardroom. Nobody seems to react to this. I'm shocked, honestly, that Giovanni is not, like, so intrigued as he is by weird shit. He's like, oh my goodness, a talking Meowth. Oh, ho, ho. Very interesting. He doesn't say shit about it.
Mm-mm. You would think the story would be Giovanni's like, oh, that's really interesting. We can do something with this.
Yes.
And then Meowth fucks everything up epically because he's Meowth. And then he's like, never mind. Let's get rid of it.
No, he's automatically... So yeah, I thought that's was how it was going to go, where he was going to be very intrigued about how he could use this for either espionage or some kind of leverage somehow. But he doesn't say anything at all. And to be honest, Giovanni is pretty annoyed right off the bat with Meowth. He's like, gross. I don't want you around, you smelly cat.
And Meowth's already obsessed with him.
He must have seen some kind of advertising or like... What, do you have a thought about Meowth's backstory with Team Rocket?
Yes, because the first word Meowth learned how to say was Rocket from his storybook.
Oh, right. So he was already obsessed. He was primed from that book.
I guess.
So, okay, presumably at this point, obviously he's learned how to talk. He's had however number of adventures he's had up until this point. He's obviously been absorbing Team Rocket material or watching videos or...
Recruitment videos. Recruitment
video. Yeah, like, he's been involved in the Team Rocket, like, intern scene for some time, apparently. He's here. Giovanni hates it automatically. Like you said, he can't help himself but just fuck stuff up from the get-go. I guess Giovanni pities him, and he's like, you can be my coffee boy for now. But he can't do anything right, so he's just causing destruction everywhere he goes, dropping shit, breaking stuff, all this. So Giovanni is like... Get him the hell out of here. I don't want to see him anymore. So I'm just going to foist him off onto Jesse and James's team, which I can't believe I did this. I skipped over the fact that Jesse has met James by now. Backing up just a little bit, Jesse is told to report to the center for new team training exercises. And Viper introduces her to her new prospective partner. If they can get through this together, they'll be paired up. And that person is, spoiler alert, the iconic James.
I hate to be the continuity guy, even though I am.
Please do.
I'm the actually expert of the world.
Do it.
At least on this podcast, I am. Jesse and James went to Pokemon Tech and flunked the entrance exam together. And then they joined the bicycle gang.
Don't say that. Don't mention that.
Why? Are we just ignoring that happened?
The anime is.
Oh, well... They were, was it Chainer Jesse because she beat people with a chain?
And yes.
Trainer James because he had training wheels?
So, okay, are we just supposed to infer as an audience that they're just unreliable narrators and that they're just making up whatever backstory they want to make up at any given time, or?
Or did they already know each other before this?
Jesse doesn't seem to recognize him.
Yeah, they don't seem to know each other.
We'll never know the truth.
It's a... They forgot. That's all.
Well, of course, but like...
They forgot. That's all it is.
Okay. Question then. Which introduction or backstory for them do you prefer? Do you prefer them having met in the bike gang? Or do you prefer them having met right here at this moment?
I think it depends on how much you like this episode.
I love this episode, so...
Yeah, well, this actually... We saw this happening, so...
But I do love the bike gang episode, too, because that was really fun.
It was really ridiculous.
I know. I love the absurd episodes. I don't know. I guess either one works. But I love this introduction. I'm going to save the quote, the iconic quote that I love so much because
okay. It's
perfect. I can't spoil it yet. So Jesse is skeptical of James and she's like, okay, newbie, whatever. If you can't keep up with me, you're out. But don't weigh me down because, you know, I'm the best of the best, and you better keep up with me if you want to have any chance of succeeding in this industry. But like I mentioned, Giovanni's tired of Meowth, so he's like, just give him to the new team, which I'm like really confused about why Giovanni did Jesse and James dirty like this. Why would he send Meowth to them?
I think he just said, I don't care what you do with it. Just get rid of the damn thing. And they were like, we'll pair it with Jesse. Because apparently, according to Team Rocket Academy, every Team Rocket squad needs to be a guy, a girl, and a Pokemon.
I don't know. I thought he said, I would have to go back and watch it, but I'm pretty sure, I thought Giovanni made a comment to be like, send him to the new team or something. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, did he? Okay. Maybe I just missed it.
We may have to play it back. I may be completely talking out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure he said something.
Play back the tape.
Yeah. Let me know if I'm wrong or not, you guys, because I may or may not be. Anyway, so now that they have the new teams formed, flashing forward a little bit, Viper gives them their next training mission assignment, which is to reach a set point out in the wilderness by any route necessary. They can go however they want to go within a 24-hour period. And all they have is a basic survival pack with a loaf of bread and a bottle of water. That's all you get. Got to survive, figure it out from there. Jesse and James, being the baddies that they are, they dig into this mission right away. They are dead serious. But this is the part where I know when we've talked about this episode before, I'm like, Jesse and James had such potential. They were so badass on their own, but it's Meowth that ruins them. It's him. He's the curse. He is the one that makes them bumbling idiots because they were like completely locked into the mission. They were awesome. But he's just, Meowth is there. He's complaining about everything. He's pathetic. He has a lack of drive. He's like, oh, this is hard. I can't go on. And so James, his fatal flaw is that he's empathetic to a fault. And so he sees Meowth falling behind. And so he's constantly going back to help him. And he even offers him his only sustenance and water. He's like, here, you can have mine. So I'm like, oh, James, what the hell? It speaks to his good heart deep down. And that's the thing about Team Rocket is they say that they're evil and they say they want to be bad, but we know truly that they're good. So anyway, later that night, Jesse is about to dig into her food, but she sees that James and Meowth are hungry because Meowth is a glutton and James is too nice. So she's like, okay. So she splits her bread into three, tries to give some to James. James is very humble. He's like, no, you need your strength. You need to eat it. But Meowth is a little greedy pig. And he's like, oh, I'll take that. Don't mind if I do.
He's like a Labrador retriever or something.
I know. I hate him already. James has a nice moment where he's feeling very, I don't know, existential, I suppose. And he's like, you know what I feel like, Jesse? I feel like our team is the start of something special. And if we really work together and stick together, we can be the best team that there ever was. He makes a solemn promise to her that he'll never let her down no matter what. And I was like, that is the sweetest thing ever. I love this. Ah. Team Rocket, Jesse and James, they're so iconic.
And I mean, he's right.
I know. I love it. I love it.
They're miserably incompetent at doing evil because we've been over this a million times. It's not what they truly in their heart of hearts are good at or want.
I know.
But every time they're on the side of good or righteousness, or when they're pursuing their individual talents and skills and interests, they excel.
And that is the irony of it all. I love them. Name a better duo. Wait, you can't.
Name a better trio.
I mean, at this point.
I have a lengthy defense of Meowth brewing, but okay. I'm saving it for the end.
I'm waiting for, I know you will, and I'm doing this partially because I want to hear
to
your clapback. Yes, okay. I'm gassing you up for the inevitable clapback that you're going to do. So,
okay.
I love this moment. I just think that they're the best, and the fact that they're just soulmates already off the bat, and they can just feel it. Perfect.
Do you remember that episode when Jesse stole the gym badges? And James was able to tell her through a full body disguise, and they were all like, how do you know? And James is like, Jesse and I have a connection like no other. I am able to tell exactly who she is based on a very distinctive style that only exactly. She and I share. Like
it's a soul bond. Like there, you cannot tell me that they would not find each other. Like throughout all lifetimes. Like, if there was ever a reincarnation, like a thread throughout time and space and destiny, like, they are just ride or die. They are bonded forever.
This is at least the third time they've met.
At least. They find each other throughout all lifetimes, right? So the next day, they're confronted with more obstacles on their training course so they get to the point that they're supposed to get to. But Meowth is still an unrepentant coward. And so when they get to this rickety and rotting bridge, Jesse and James are like, okay, we can do this. We just have to be careful. We can go across. We got to get past this obstacle. And Meowth is like, I'm scared and I can't swim. Wah. And so James has to carry Meowth because he can't do it himself. So Jesse makes it across totally fine. But unfortunately, while James is crossing, the rope bridge that he's on snaps. And so in a selfless sacrifice, he's like, okay, Meowth, save yourself. I'm going to let go so that Jesse can pull you up because she can't pull you up with me hanging here. So he lets go and he plunges to his supposed demise into the rushing river. And it's so sad.
Did you laugh at the smash cut to him in a full body cast in the hospital?
Yes, I did.
Did they like airlift him out of there?
They must have. I don't know how in the hell. I guess they must have had like some emergency one radio or something for like dire emergencies. Because I guess they airlifted him out. Later, we flash to the hospital where he is, like Austin said, in a full body cast. Mummified, face, everything covered up. And the doctor gives a grim prognosis, and he's like, okay, he's really hurt, and he can't continue on. It's really sad, poor James. Viper gives Jesse, Butch, and Cassidy, apparently these are the last team to make it to this point, just them three.
Did everyone else die climbing up the mountain?
I guess. Like, why else would they fail? Do they not make it within the 24-hour period? Are we supposed to assume that, or like what?
Who knows?
Okay.
Also, is the implication that Jesse went on without James and got to the rendezvous point and then they fished him out later?
I think that they probably called in the emergency and then she just continued on after they airlifted him out.
Oh, after, okay, the rescue team came.
Unless, I mean, I'm assuming they had, like I said, I'm assuming they had like a one-way walkie-talkie. You know how like in Survivor, they give you like the emergency phone to be like, if you need this, you can call us, but the challenge is over, like whatever.
Okay.
I'm assuming either A, they had that, she called it in, they airlifted him, and then she went on, or she had no choice but to go on, get to the rendezvous point, and then say there's an emergency.
Oh, that makes sense. I like that one.
Okay. I think that was kind of what you were implying. So maybe you're right. Maybe that's all she could do was get there and be like, oh my god, my teammate fell into a river, hopefully he's still alive.
I like that because it's more dramatic.
Okay, we'll pretend that's what happened. Okay, so Jesse has gone on to the next phase. Her, Butch, and Cassidy are the last three left. And so for the final training mission to graduate from the academy, they have to steal the legendary red Snorlax, whatever the hell that means.
Did you love it?
I loved it, but I could not figure out what I was supposed to be seeing. I'm like, is this like a statue? Is this a real Pokemon? Like, what the fuck is happening here? So the rules are simple. If they get to the Snorlax, whoever is first in retrieving it and getting it out of the building without being caught by the cops, they pass the class and they graduate to be full Team Rocket agents. But if they fail, they're left to be caught by the police and rot in jail for all eternity. Because apparently that's the punishment befitting this crime, is jail forever. Butch, Cassidy, and Jesse are in their little rivalry and they say, well, you suck, Jesse. You have nobody on your team. Nobody wants to be on your team. So of course we're going to win because there's no way you could do it yourself. Luckily for Jesse, though, the rules for this challenge is if even just one person gets to the Snorlax and gets out without being caught, they all pass. Like, everybody on the team passes. The challenge starts, and Jesse is waiting outside the building, but she laments that she's always left alone at the end, and this happens every time. But she is surprised when James, who is still wrapped up in his full body cast, pops out from behind a tree. And he's like, hello, I'm here. Of course, I made you a promise. I would never let you go through this by yourself. I've always got your back.
Yeah, there's the flamboyant James we know.
Love it.
when he pops out of the bandages, it's like, aha!
Aha! Ho ho, I'm here. He's the best. James is the best. Oh my god, they're both the best. So they go through the challenge, they get to the top just at the same time as Butch and Cassidy. But Butch and Cassidy are cocky and ignorant about pitfall traps, and so they run right into one and fall into the dark pits of this building. Goodbye. James and Meowth also fall, but Jessie is smart enough to be like, wait, just as they fall, and so she's able to catch them and pull them back up and not have a repeat of the last time, so...
Yeah, James tries to let go again. He tries to do the same thing.
I know, he tries to sacrifice himself yet again, and Jessie is not having this. She's like, no, I'm not letting you sacrifice yourself again. We're going to do this together as a team. And so they do, and it's just so heartwarming. They're just about to finish the challenge. The alarm is tripped, and all the cops are rushing in. Unfortunately, even though they got the extraction balloon onto the cage with the red Snorlax, they run out of time before they can leave the building. So it's like, oh no, did they fail? And surprise, turns out the red Snorlax was not either of the things I thought. It was not a real Pokemon, nor was it just an inanimate object. It was actually Drill Sergeant Viper in a Snorlax costume. What the fuck? What? That's so crazy. What the hell? He's like, it was all a test. This building wasn't real. These cops weren't real. It was all part of a big elaborate scheme.
I think they should have figured that out when, like, the building was covered in, like, death traps and pitfalls and, like, laser beams and smoke bombs and floods and all sorts of stuff.
I love how Team Rocket is just so... They just have a building, like a huge training clock tower building in the middle of the city, completely, like, unobstructed by any sort of, like, real cop activity, or I guess they got building permits to do that. Like, how in the hell is this even happening?
I like to imagine that if you go into the lobby, there'll be, like, a Team Rocket grunt at the front desk. Be like, welcome to Team Rocket Academy training building facility. How can I help you? Like,
and a tour, they put on a tour of the building, and they're like, and here is our state-of-the-art facility where prospective Team Rocket grunts can test their mettle as their final training course. And they have, like, offices in there and shit. Like, I love it. Oh, God.
Maybe that's where the HR department is.
Maybe. Very well could be. Anyway, all that being said, Drill Sergeant Viper is very impressed, somehow, with everybody involved in this. Somehow, Cassidy and Butch have gotten to the end, and they didn't fail out, even though they failed the challenge.
I guess they got through every trap except for the last one. And the only reason Jessie's team did not fall for that trap is because Cassidy and Butch fell in it first. And so Jessie was able to be like, wait.
Right.
And have that split second of hesitation.
I guess.
So I guess they got far enough.
I guess it's just either like they graded on a curve or something. I don't know. It's not just a straight up pass fail, because they're pretty lenient with their criteria here, because Viper's like, even though you failed, technically, you still made it to the end. And that's good enough.
Well, didn't Giovanni and Viper say that they were in need of new field agents?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, so...
there was like a shortage or something?
So they're that hard up for a talent that they're just like, oh, take them anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't know, maybe.
Anyway, they end up both passing, and Jessie's team is awarded with agent status, and Cassidy's team is awarded with the villain in training status.
Here's my next question.
What's the difference?
How many days after the events of this flashback did Team Rocket attack the Viridian City Pokemon Center and become obsessed with a Pikachu? Was it years? Was it days? I don't know.
I don't know. I want to say it's probably a couple months. Let's just say a couple months.
Enough time for their pictures to be on Officer Jenny's wanted list.
They've done a few criminal things. They've obviously been active as Team Rocket agents in the field for a while, maybe a few months, and then we have...
All downhill from there.
The infamous Viridian City incident, all downhill from there, like you said. I just need to know, what do you think the difference between agent and villain in training is?
Butch and Cassidy didn't get their start until 50 episodes later when they got caught by Todd Snap taking pictures of their breeding center scheme.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm speculating.
So maybe, okay, I'm thinking agent is like direct into the field. Like you're good to go. And then villain in training is like, okay, you just need to take a couple remedial classes for a couple weeks and then you'll be fine.
Sure.
Sure. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Well, that is it. That is the backstory, or at least one of them, for how Jesse and James met and inevitably became corrupted by Meowth's unfortunate presence in the group. So that's it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I know you didn't like it.
I know you loved it. I did like it. I just thought it was better than it was, if that makes sense.
Okay, but you're going to defend Meowth now, right?
I am going to defend Meowth. Okay. Here's my kind of fan fiction read on this.
Okay.
Which is what the premise of this podcast is. We kind of like read into things and make shit up and make our own narrative out of this.
So you're...
We take a basis and we build on it.
You're giving a liberal interpretation of this, so...
My interpretation is Jesse and James are very lost at this point in their lives. They've been through countless backstories, especially Jesse, and they are in Team Rocket, and they are, like, not being themselves. Jesse is being cool as a cucumber. She's not her artsy, true self. James is not being... I mean, he's being flamboyant as hell, but he's not being a showman like he naturally should be. And in this episode, Jesse especially is very cloistered off to other people. That's her story here. And James, I don't know if he would have done this with anyone he was paired with, or if he truly clocks Jesse and immediately is able to connect that there's like a chemistry here. I can tell immediately that we are a good partnership. Yes, Alex?
Oh, I'm so sorry. You said chemistry, and I immediately just remembered there was, I know we have established firmly that
yes.
James and Jesse are not.
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get
to that. Okay. I'm sorry. I had to mention it. I had to throw it out there.
Okay.
We'll tell you what we're talking about in just a second.
And when we see them very briefly, where it's just the two of them, as you said, it's very militaristic, very professional, very, we are not people, we are Team Rocket agents. We are in training and we are going to do this competently and effectively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until Meowth comes in the picture.
Yep.
Meowth comes in the picture and he is being his honest, earnest self. And he's like, I'm a hungry street cat. The only time I've ever had food in my life is when I worked with a Meowth gang on the streets of Hollywood. You know what? I want bread. Give me that bread. Give me that water. I'm hungry. Give me it. This is the lap of luxury as far as I'm concerned. And James, being the empathetic, caring, kind soul that he is able to connect with him and sacrifice for him. And Jesse, instead of turning her nose up, goes along with him. And she kind of gets dragged back into humanity through James's actions. And in the end, they are able to form as a trio through the symbology of we're going to pull each other up, etc. We're not going to sacrifice each other. We're not going to put each other down. We're going to be a unit. And only through our combined strengths can we work as a team. Right?
Yes.
I think without Meowth, Jesse and James never have those bonding moments. I think they may not work as a partnership. I don't think they work as a duo because they are not being their true self. Think about it. Through this episode, James does not go, ooh! Jesse does not go on and on about how much of a glamorous diva, superstar, actress, supermodel she is. They don't wear disguises. They don't go into elaborate fantasies. They don't come up with randomly convoluted scenarios for no particular reason. They don't waste God knows how much of Giovanni's money on stupid shit for no reason. They don't. Alex, I'm not done.
Oh, God. I'm bursting at the seams for my rebuttal. Okay.
If Meowth does not join this pairing, I don't think Jesse and James bond. I think he's going to wash out. I think he's going to fall off that bridge. And I think Jesse's going to move on and not give a shit about him at all. I think it's only through the synergy of the three of them that Meowth is able to bring Jesse back through her humanity, through the lens of James, and they are able to be the kooky, wacky selves that we know them to be. Because maybe Jesse could be the most super competent thief in the world, and she could get Giovanni's favor, and she could be the high rank. She could be Domino or something like that by herself. But through James and Meowth, she's able to be who we know Jesse to truly be, which is a good person who get sidetracked with this stupid follow Ash Ketchum and Pikachu plot that they're going to vote 30 years of their lives to. And that's the true Team Rocket that they have to be. Because if Team Rocket's not stupid and silly and flamboyant and ridiculous, we don't care about them. They're nobodies. They're Attila and Hun. They're... who cares? God.
Okay, you make some good points. However, I am going to dig my heels in a little bit and disagree in a certain way. There are plenty of times in the current iteration of Team Rocket, Jesse, James, and Meowth, following Ash, whatever. And we have talked about this recently, too, where Jesse and James are content to walk away. They're content to, you know, do certain things or not do certain things. It's only when Meowth comes in with his harebrained schemes and his corrupting influence that they get sucked back into the fantasy of delusional, like, okay, yes, this plan is going to work. This cockamamie idea is actually, you know, grounded in some kind of reality. Like, it's not. They go along with these schemes because of Meowth in a lot of instances. I think I have to just kind of disagree with you because I think Jesse, yes, she was cold, aloof, and kind of like, okay, you know what? Her attitude was generally, I need to find my person who can go toe-to-toe with me. And obviously all these stupid guys, these boys are not on my level. They keep failing me, letting me down. And they do. You know, the one guy we see drops the rope. I mean, that's stupid amateur shit, right? She meets James when Viper introduces James to her. And that moment, even without Meowth, it seemed like they kind of like were clocking each other a little bit. Like when Viper's like, here's James. And James is like, he says that iconic thing that he says, which I'm still saving for the quote. And she's like, okay, okay. I think right then they had the connection where she's like recognizing him like, okay, this guy is different from any other person I've encountered. I think he can go toe-to-toe with me. Let's see what you're made of. And they do go through the original training course together and he stays with her. He keeps up with her. So I think then she's realizing, okay, this guy could be something different. We don't get to see enough of them without Meowth though. I think that's the problem. But I can easily imagine a scenario where they're going through that final mission without Meowth and James being still empathetic might offer Jesse bread or might say, here, you know, you need this more or hang on to her if she's falling. And then I think even without Meowth, their bond could still be solidified. I think they would just be them still, but actually competent. That's my take on it.
I think we, with that, okay, this is going to sound ridiculous. I think with Meowth, they steal Pikachu from Ash and take it back to the Team Rocket headquarters, and we never see them ever again.
That's the whole point. Without Meowth, they would have succeeded. But that's the bad thing.
We don't want that. Well, that's not what we want.
Oh, of course, okay. For the purposes of Pokemon.
So I think we're agreeing on this.
Okay, I can agree. Okay, from a narrative perspective, I disagree with you because I think Jesse and James have the capacity to be competent, and it's Meowth who is the one who really brings their worst traits out and you know, makes them go down to this level of buffoonery. But from a Team Rocket iconic Pokemon story, of course they have to be the bumbling trio. We would never have Pokemon the way it is without them. Like, they make the story, right? Of course.
So I don't think that's their worst trait. I think them being buffoons and being so over the top, I think that's their best trait. I think that's their true selves. And I think even throughout the course of the first season, we see them become more silly.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we can retroactively pretend, because all of this is unintentional, that they are becoming more comfortable with each other, and this is what they really are. And I think the twerps, I think Ash has a huge effect on them as well. I think they don't ever want to admit that, except for sometimes in the movies. But obviously, they love the twerps. Team Rocket adores the twerps. Of course they do.
There has been episodes where they have gone out of their way to help them, the twerps, and root for Ash or whatever. I mean, yes, we've seen that.
This is their lives. Like, this is where we are truly happy, is by being a group together and having this ridiculous harebrained Pikachu scheme as an excuse to forever go and forever be together.
Okay, yes. And we have had moments where they have confessed their devotion to each other again and come back together, you know, especially when they have their little spats and they have falling outs and they come back together ultimately at the end and they're like, Jesse, James, be off. Of course they love each other. They come back and they reconcile or whatever. I mean, we've seen that too. Like, but I don't know. I love the idea that it's Meowth. It's the one that keeps them from being like normal, but.
We are forgetting one additional element. Actually,
okay.
Two things.
Is this the thing? Are you going
to
talk about
I got one thing before that.
Okay.
The episode ends with them coming back to the present day. They flash back to the today. And who jumps out but Wobbuffet and joins them in their blast. Wobbuffet is the final key to the puzzle of like, look how silly and goofy we are. This is who we are. This is what we were meant to be.
Sure.
Now, the other element is, I'll just say it, the sexual chemistry of Jesse and James.
We had to talk about it because, as we mentioned, there is a small, brief moment where when Jesse pulls James out of the pitfall trap the second time at the tower, he falls on top of her, she is underneath him, and she blushes, and he's panting hard, and Meowth comes up and, like, interrupts them.
It is a split second of...
Split second.
Oh!
Oh! That was shocking to me, actually.
It's just a split second.
I didn't know what to make of that because I know we've firmly established in our conversations and other interactions that they've had that they are absolutely not romantically involved with each other.
I think the implication... Okay, tell me if I'm crazy. I think the implication there is Jesse and James... Even though, obviously, I don't think either Jesse or James are entirely heterosexual creatures.
Hey, you know what? Sexuality is a spectrum.
Yes,
you
but I do
slide
think...
Slide around it all over the place.
I do think... In another timeline, another world, when Celebi interferes.
Oh, God.
Or maybe this happened before Celebi interfered. I don't know. Jesse and James, they could have been fucking.
I mean, it could be friends with benefits.
Yes. I'm not saying they're necessarily romantically involved. I do think I could see a scenario in which they're pounding it out. I don't think that would be good for their relationship in the long term. Obviously, a lot of people have friendships with people that you've had sex with. I think that's fine. But Jesse and James, I think, have such an intense connection that if you were to bring in romantic or sexual elements, it would just explode and not work. They have something far deeper than either of those things.
That is such a good analysis.
Without me out to cock block them in that moment.
You know, maybe, yeah, I think that was the catalyst right there. It's like maybe they could have gone on doing that without that. So maybe Meowth saves them from destroying and self-imploding their soul bond that they have because it would have never worked out. Like, it would be too messy. It would be too much mess if they had a sexual relationship.
I think we both agree there is a chemistry there. I think they could have potentially misinterpreted it and gone in the incorrect direction with it. And what we have is what was destined. That was the correct path for them to go. If they were real people, which they're not.
Of course. In our highly detailed and unnecessary analysis of this, of course.
Yes.
Oh my God. I love this episode. I think we haven't talked so intensely about an episode in a while. So
no, we had a lot to say.
We did have a lot to say. And I really thoroughly enjoyed your analysis of that. I love it. You put words to what I was thinking. But yeah, no, I loved it. I loved it. I don't really have any notes about it.
I wish it was a two-parter.
I know. Okay, that would have been so great. Like I said earlier, I wish that they had showed Jesse and James more of their interactions prior to Meowth coming onto the scene. I feel like we deserve to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get that. We got interrupted by Meowth. Oh, well.
I would have liked to see a bit more after the Academy leading into Ash.
That's also a good point. So Jesse and James without Meowth, and then also Jesse, James, Meowth without Ash. Like, what did they look like prior to Ash? That would have been perfect also. God, we'll never know. But that's why we have our imaginations.
You know what we completely avoided talking about was Black and White.
Oh, why? Oh.
Because that series poses the question of, what if Jesse, James, and Meowth were hyper-confident Team Rocket agents?
I mean, they are, though, in Black and White.
We'll get there, maybe.
More or less. Okay. We'll save it for a later time. But anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought that was great.
Do we want to do the MVP, LVP in quote?
I think so.
I think you're bursting for your quote.
I am bursting. I've mentioned it a few times and I can't say it yet because I want to save it. So,
well, you're going first.
Okay. I'll save that to the very end. My MVP, can I just give it to both Jesse and James? Or is that
cheating? Yeah, of course.
Okay, I'm going to give it to Jesse and James because they're absolutely iconic in this episode. I love them so much. And I think we talked about them extensively, so I really don't have any other comments. But my LVP, I'm a little stuck because I have two. One, I'm going back and forth. One, potentially Meowth because of everything. And then the other one, Giovanni, which I never thought I would ever say that. Giovanni for LVP. But I'm going to give it to Giovanni just because I'm going to be wild and crazy.
It's a wild and crazy episode.
It's a wild and crazy episode and a wild and crazy conversation.
He misplayed his hand.
He really did. In a rare L for Giovanni.
Is it a rare L?
Definitely a rare L. Giovanni.
I don't think it is a rare L. I don't think Giovanni ever actually does anything too successfully.
He's the ultimate incompetent, but that makes him just the best. He's so bad, he's good, is what I'm going to tell myself. Anyway, he definitely approaches the Meowth situation very poorly. He is not intrigued by a talking Meowth. He doesn't utilize Meowth in any kind of meaningful way. He just sort of treats Meowth from the get-go as an annoyance, something to get rid of, and just put him off onto some inconsequential team that's going to fail out anyway, and whatever, it's not worth my time. And to that point, I don't think he did Jesse and James very well either, because he just sort of was like, oh, here's this annoyance that is incompetent, and so I'm just going to set Jesse and James up to fail. You know, in a defense of my analysis of what Jesse and James could have been without Meowth, he's the one who caused that whole domino effect. I know, Austin, you disagree with me, but to prop up my point in that regard,
okay. I'm
just going to say that. So, and of course, without further ado, the most iconic quote of the entire anime, perhaps.
Really?
Really?
Not, I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan?
That might be the most iconic. This is one of the most iconic. I love this. This is one of my favorite James moments of all time. When Viper is introducing James to Jesse, and she's like sizing him up, and she says to him, "Listen up, James. I hope you're good, because I'm not going to carry you." And James replies, No one's carried me since my mama. Mic drop. I loved it. It was the best. And I love Eric Stewart. Honorary MVP to Eric Stewart for that perfect delivery of that line. You could not have done it better. Loved it. Loved it.
My MVP is going to be Drill Sergeant Viper.
Yeah.
Because he was like a cool, like, stern teacher type. Like, he like cared about his students or whatever, you know? He had a cool look to him, too.
He was like the Robin Williams in like Dead Poets Society or something.
Oh my god, can you imagine if it had gone that direction? He was like comforting a crying Jesse or something. Or I guess James.
He was a good teacher. He was pretty lenient and I liked him. Yeah, I agree.
He gives Emma Frost energy a little bit.
Oh my god. Kind of does.
Kind of. That's kind of a stretch. My LVP. Damn, you already gave it to Giovanni. Ironically, I'm going to give it to Meowth.
Wow. After all of that, are you kidding? Wow. Because, do tell, Austin. I'm so interested to see what you say.
Because Meowth, as we see here, was not forced into Team Rocket. He elected to go to Team Rocket. He could have done anything in the world that would have been... I mean, obviously, I know. I was talking about all that destiny of Jesse, James, and Meowth written in the stars kind of stuff. But Meowth is the one choosing to be obsessed with Giovanni, even though he has no reason to be. Because the implication was always kind of that Meowth was Giovanni's little pet for a while there. But as we see, that was never actually true.
Maybe it was a fantasy all the
time. It was all a fantasy. He's obsessed with Giovanni. He's convinced himself that Giovanni is a god for no real reason.
You know, Meowth is the poster child for never meet your idols. Never meet them because it's not ever what you think. And that's exactly what happened when he met Giovanni for real.
All right, so. Here's my word. Okay, we never really mention it, but there's the recurring gag of everyone calling Butch every name in the world other than Butch.
Yeah.
Except for in this instance where Cassidy says, "Let's do it, Butch." And Butch says, "It's Butch, not... Oh, that's what you said."
Oh, that was great.
Sorry, I'm no Eric Stewart. I couldn't do that right.
I wish we had remembered to write down all of what they called him in this episode, because didn't they call him some random shit? Like,
I don't even pay attention to it.
Like Bob or something? I have no idea. I couldn't even tell you, but
God,
the one time he's actually called by his name.
I was disappointed we didn't get to see Dr. Namba.
Maybe Dr. Namba hasn't, like, joined up yet.
Yeah. I don't think maybe Butch and Cassidy meet him until the Operation Great Big Lugia.
Great Big Lugia! Oh, my God.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was great. I love that. I'm so glad we finally got to this episode. I've been waiting for so long.
That was a big one.
That was a big one. Guys out there, tell us, what did you think of this episode?
I really do think it's too bad the timing couldn't work out for this to be episode 200. But c'est la vie, c'est la vie.
Yeah, that would have been a perfect, like, cap. But speaking of episode 200, what are we talking about next week?
Yes, National Podcast Dex episode 200, aka Advanced Episode 31, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be Candid Camera Upt, which Alex may have already started watching.
May have not, allegedly, supposedly.
And we're going back to where it all began with the Chronicles episode, Journey to the Starting Line.
Oh, wow. Okay, that sounds intriguing. I don't remember that at all, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that's about.
That's going to be our anniversary episode. We'll make the most of it.
Okay. Oh my God, you guys, that's so exciting. Thank you all for sticking with us for this long. If you've been a longtime listener or if you're new, we appreciate you guys. I can't believe it's been 200 Out of the Drying Pan episodes, just about. We look forward to that. Hope you guys are too. But in the meantime, if you have any feedback, thoughts you want to share about this episode or anything else, you can always do that. You can get in touch with us. Our email is outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. We also have social media. Austin always posts some really funny stuff over on Blue Sky, so give us a follow over there. We also have an Instagram. The handle for both is @outofthedryingpan. So give us a like and a follow over there. We also have a Patreon. If you love this podcast, if you like what we do and make you laugh, consider checking us out. We've got all kinds of cool bonus content that we upload over there. Check out the link. It's in our description. And as always, we'd like to say thank you guys so, so much for listening. And we hope to see you next week as the journey continues. Capture Pikachu.